is the Freedom Fiends, Hour 1, and this is the Freedom Fiends Special Edition, broadcasting from the Warmabago Mobile Studio in the depths of Bootleg Bayou, where the swamps meet the sea and revenuers dare not tread. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. And you can learn more about that at bipcot.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And my name is Ben Stone. With me is James Babb. And we have a very special guest. I said this is a special edition. We have a very special guest with us today, Lynn Albrecht. She is the mother of the person you probably know best as the Dread Pirate Roberts. Or maybe you've heard about the Silk Road, or maybe you've heard of Lynn, but one way or the other, because Lynn has been out there doing a lot of talking and a lot of work trying to get her son out of this horrible mess that has surrounded him. And so we're going to talk with Lynn today as long as she can stick with us. And so Lynn, welcome to the Freedom Fiends. I'm so happy that to have you on. It's just a thrill to have you on the show.
Well, I'm very happy to be here and be with you guys.
There's so much confusion about Ross, and so we should probably just throw that thing out right now, all that confusion, and just get that out of the way. It's, you know, talking about Ross and this mess with Silk Road and the trials and you know, all of this stuff, the idea of Dread Pirate Roberts, all of these different things, it brings up a variety of really wild, crazy accusations that people have heard from the internet, or they heard from the news, or they heard from some guy that was down the street mowing his lawn or whatever. And the vast majority of what I see people talking about is either confusion, it's misinformation, intentional misinformation, I think, from the media or from the government, or it's just outright lies and nonsense and rumors. And I know that, Lynn, I know you've done a lot of work to try to dispel the craziest of those, and I know that it has to just get really tiresome having to deal with all that stuff over and over. So would you be more comfortable, you know, throwing out all that stuff, or do you want me to just mock those people and make fun of them and say, you know, because I take great joy in mocking people like that.
Well, feel free, but yeah, I read a lot of misinformation. I mean, a friend of my sister said, but they were selling people on Silk Road. And I'm like, what? Oh, now it was a slave site? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's so sensationalized that, and even Newsweek put on its cover that it was the Amazon for hitmen.
Ugh.
And there were no hitmen on Silk Road. I mean, this is Newsweek.
Yeah.
On its cover. So it's understandable that people would have, it is. And I wrote the woman who, I emailed her who did the article. She said, well, I'm not responsible for the cover.
Ugh.
And I'm like, well, hello, whatever. Do you people care about accuracy
at
all?
They don't care.
Yeah, that's quite apparent. To be clear, Ross was never charged. And so, of course, obviously was not convicted of any planned murder at all in the trial. There is an indictment in Maryland. It's been there for almost 2 years now, just sitting there. And as Glenn Reynolds said, you can indict a ham sandwich in this country. All it takes is hearsay. It takes no proof whatsoever. And my point is, that's a stale sandwich by now. It's 2 years old. And I think, why haven't they gone ahead with it? I think because it's just they don't have what it takes to take it to trial, and they're just, using it to poison Ross's reputation. And his lawyer said if it had any merit, they would have incorporated it into the trial. In addition, of course, Maryland is the site of the corrupt agents. They have admitted to corruption. I don't even have to say alleged anymore. They have admitted to corruption on the site. And it wasn't just stealing money. It was the fact that they had, quote unquote, the keys to the kingdom. They could change passwords, reset PIN numbers, commandeer accounts, including DPR's account, without his knowing. They had access to chats and posts on the forum and the marketplace. They had access to bank accounts, keys. I mean, on and on. They basically had access to the site and to changing anything they wanted for almost a year. So that, to me, calls into question all the evidence. And I don't see how you can rely on anything that came from the site and the server if those people had that kind of access. But that was in Maryland, and that's where this indictment's sitting. So there's a lot of questions, and a lot of this corruption has been is still sealed, by the way. I'm not sure why, since the government, they've already admitted their guilt. So why is anything about it sealed? And can, you know, now, and so Ross, I can just tell you, is and of course I'm his mother. People, oh well, you're his mother. Of course you're going to say that. You know, he's your little angel, whatever. Well, read the 100 letters that are posted on our website from people who know him, friends, family, and other inmates, about the kind of person Ross is. And then decide if you can believe the government when they don't even charge him. They just talk about it. Those people, I believe, if they had any real substance to their accusation or allegation, would have put it at the top of their list. They're not the kind of people to give you a pass. Oh, we won't bother with that murder. We'll just, you know, it's okay. We won't bother to go there. We'll just talk about it if they could have. So there's a, you know, it disturbs me and concerns me how readily people believe the government and the media. I think it's a real problem.
Yeah, and there's no check on the media other than us. I mean, they can come out there, they can say anything they want to say, and if nobody calls them on it, then they just continue spewing that stuff. And I've seen it so many times where the headline of some story is sensationalized, and then you get down into the body of the story, and it never says what that headline says. And therefore, you know, the news media is not responsible, you know, and you'll get that. I've ran into that myself, where the writer of an article will say, well, the editor made that headline. I didn't have anything to do with that. Or, you know, it's splashed all over Drudge Report or some other website like that, where they don't even use the original headline. They can say anything they want in their own headline, linking back to that story. And so you get all kinds of wild stuff out of all this. I wanted to emphasize, though, something you said there, that of all, and there were seven in the actual trial that Ross went through. He was convicted of seven crimes, and of all of those seven crimes, none of them involved actual violence. There was nothing mentioned in any of those seven counts that had anything to do with a murder for hire or any actual violence that took place. Each one of those seven counts. None of them, according to libertarian standards that most libertarians recognize, none of them would justify any kind of even arrest or anything in a libertarian society. So I just wanted to throw that out there and make that completely clear. And yet, if you read the comments that the judge made on the day of sentencing, essentially, he said, even though Ross is not charged with these things, and even though Ross is the confusion between how many Dread Pirate Robertses there were or how many people had access to the Dread Pirate Roberts, the DPR account, even the judge acknowledged that all of that may be true, but essentially what she said. In her statement was essentially, but we've got Ross and we're going to just punish him with everything we've got. And that's really how I boiled down her argument in that, is that, yeah, you know, Ross maybe is not all that guilty of everything in the world, but he's the guy we got. And so we're going to beat him. And, you know, that's just the flavor I got out of her statements.
Well, yeah, he's the poster boy.
Yeah.
He's the poster boy for their drug war that they are doubling down on, that they, you know, never mind that it is the biggest failure as far as having people actually stop using drugs, which would be a good thing from my point of view. But it hasn't worked. It's worked in to expand the prison industrial complex and put nonviolent people in prison and destroy a lot of lives, but it hasn't stopped anyone from using drugs.
Right.
But anyway, I want just to address some of the things you brought up. The headline thing, I have run into many times. It's very true. They'll go, oh, I didn't write that headline. And maybe that's true. You know, that editors come and they put the most sensationalistic headline they can. And then that's what people read. You know, everybody wants something quick. And, you know, let's get the base, you know, just the bottom line quick, gets on to the next thing. And it creates, over time, a whole image. People don't delve deeply. And, of course, the journalists themselves don't. Right. A lot of them. Right. Not all of them, but a lot of them. They stay on the surface, and then the readers stay on the surface. As regards the counts that he was charged with and then convicted for, ultimately he wasn't sentenced for the 7. He was sentenced for 5. And I think that brings up a very interesting point, which is they tend to pile on charges. And this is not just with Ross. This is, I'm told, very typical. They'll pile on several different charges for the same action. So it seems worse than it is. And it prejudices a jury. It also intimidates right. people into pleaing. Because, yeah, like, we have this against you, that against you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's back up for just a second. That we probably have some audience members that really don't know what we're talking about. And I just want to take a quick second and let people know that Ross was a free market pioneer who created a website called the Silk Road, which people conducted involuntary transactions over the internet on the dark web. Okay, so he created a website, and this, you know, there have been multiple administrators, from what I understand, of this website, but it was something that he started on the dark web where people could trade voluntarily. And, you know, much the way people trade on Craigslist, except this was wildly successful. And so all of these charges basically are just revolving around creating and administering a website, or at least getting it in off the ground. So all of these charges, all of this weird kingpin stuff and selling drugs and money laundering and selling IDs and all of the charges that revolve around this basically just revolve around creating a website. Would you say that's a good description, or am I oversimplifying?
No, he has none of the things that he was charged for did he actually do himself.
Folks, we're going to break away for a little trip to the market. Stick with us. We're going to be right back with more with Lynn Ulbricht and James Babb and me, Ben Stone.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Fiends coming at you with our special guest. And I should mention also that if Freedom Fiends sounds a little strange today, we've got a couple odd things that are happening. First off, we're not using Fiend Phone. We're using Skype. So if you hear some kind of weird metallic sounds or some of the odd things that you're not used to hearing with the clarity of a Fiend Phone, that's why. But this is what we have to, you know, we're doing something else that's very unusual. We almost never do interviews because, you know, I'm sorry, folks, but most people are just not important enough for the Freedom Fiends to interview. But Lynn Albright is different.
I'm honored.
Oh yeah.
She is important enough, and what she has to say today is incredibly important. And if you're hearing this on the radio and you can't listen to the whole thing, get to freedomfiends.com, freedomfiends.com, and download the full thing and listen to it, because you really need to hear what Lynn has to say about this. The other thing that I did want to mention, unusually here, we are recording this. We're going to try to play it over and over again, or as many times as possible. So again, it's a little odd that Freedom Fiends is doing a pre-recorded show, but this is what we need to do to make sure and do this. And this is not, James and I have talked about this beforehand. We really want to get this show right today, because we want this to stand for a really long time, for people to be able to look back and say, Can you believe back in 2015, they arrested a guy and convicted a guy, and all he did was create a website. There, you know, that's at some point in time, people are going to look back in history and they're going to be baffled that you know, these people in what they used to call America, they were so weird that they arrested a guy and threw him in jail for a double life sentence. Was it double life or triple life, Lynn?
It's double life plus a few other things thrown in.
For having a website, not for killing anybody, not for any horrible crimes, rape or murder or nothing like that. No, yeah, Charles Manson, he was convicted and he's in jail for the rest of his life. Okay,
he's up for parole, though. He gets to come up for parole. Ross doesn't.
Can you believe the strangeness of this? What kind of a world is this that we have allowed?
Insanity. It's insanity.
Cody Wilson pointed out that Manuel Noriega, who they had to send the Marines in and invade a country to get, got 30.
Yeah.
Ross, I mean, it's you know, the Aurora shooter just got, and I think he's probably mentally ill, and there's a whole, but it's like he got life, not double, just
right. One.
He only has to pay one life. You know, it's really harsher sentence than that.
Well,
it's why, and you know, I recently tweeted, does anyone really, well, that's what I was about to say exactly. What, well, okay. Two things. As far as a threat to people in society, I tweeted, I said, does anybody really believe that they are less safe if Ross Ulbricht is free? Nobody feels that way.
Oh, of course not. No, a threat.
Come
to the,
on. But yes, exactly. Well, right. And I think Cody Wilson actually just recently pointed out, he said, it shows how afraid they are about the internet. And that whole, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I have my ideas about what it was really about, and I don't think drugs was it. But, you know, well,
of course not.
You know.
They're terrified.
It's out of control, to have something out of their control. And and I've said many times, look, I'm not here to defend Silk Road. There were unsavory aspects to Silk Road. And, you know, but it was voluntary. And as you pointed out, it was based on libertarian principles. And you can argue those things, but I know for a fact that that's why Ross created the Silk Road, because we had discussed, he was never a drug person, oh, I'm going to, you know, make drugs more available, or even interested in drugs particularly. It was about freedom and giving people the experience of a free market. And you can argue that maybe it got out of hand or what, you know, there's a lot, you know, or people, some people made poor choices, and you know, there's a lot of arguments to be made, but it boils down to his motivation, which the judge rejected, was not to harm anyone. It was to give people an experience of a free market in a real sense.
And that
apparently is very threatening.
Yeah, that is what threatens them.
Wow.
You know, I've been saying for a few years now that there's very few people in government that really understand the full libertarian anarcho-capitalist message, and it's good that they don't, because once those people fully figure out this message of ours, it's going to scare their socks off, and it does. And I think this judge did figure out our message, and I think it scared her socks off. Folks, we'll be right back with more with Lynn Ulbricht.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Freedom Fiends. This is what radio sounds like now. So right before the last break, I made some statements about about this system, this what I like to refer to as this thing of ours, because it's not really a liberty movement. I don't
not
like
mine.
That phrase. Yeah. but I really think that once people in the government really figure out what our message is, it's going to mean the end of their careers if people start to catch on to what we're saying. And I think it's a serious threat to them, you know, not a physical threat, but a threat to their way of life of living off of the rest of us. And Lynn, you mentioned that you wanted to comment on that, or you had a comeback to that.
Yeah, well, you had said something about the judge being actually was afraid, and actually she said so. In the sentencing, she referred to Ross's political views and said they were troubling and dangerous, which I thought political views were protected by the First Amendment and shouldn't affect a sentence. But my impression was that it certainly did affect her sentence, as did the murder for hire, which was uncharged. It dramatically drove the sentencing, and I think she used it to justify this draconian, unbelievable sentence. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think there is a threat there. She said so. And, of course, it's basically the philosophy of our founders. That's what we're talking about here.
You know, too, she said that she read these statements from people who had sent her stories like, oh, my son got heroin in Boston, and without the Silk Road, you know, he wouldn't have been able to get heroin in Boston. Now he's dead. And any right-wing leaning type conservative, maybe Republican people that are hearing us on the radio and they're saying, well, those dirty hippies shouldn't have been dealing the dope anyway. Well, first off, you're misinformed about Ross. He was not a hippie. But in addition to all that, you know, when liberals, and I'll take this into a right and left direction, even though that's it's not an entirely valid argument, but when liberals, you know, bring out some crying person that stands up there with, you know, former president, whoever, whichever one of the slime that stands up there, and they have their poor victim next to them, they're like, you know, Johnny couldn't go to school until our political party came along and scooped him up and helped him make his way. And this has become a thing since the Clintons. I think it became a new trick that leftists started pulling, and now right-wing people are pulling it too. But where they drag this one example up and they say, oh, feel sorry for this person. They try to humanize the argument by giving you a face to feel sorry for. And this judge did that. The judge brought in these arguments like, oh, my son couldn't have gotten heroin in Boston. Okay, let me just, I'm not in Boston. I'm way down in southern Alabama, but my wife and I travel all over the country in our RV, and I've been all over the place, including Boston. And I'm telling you, you can get heroin pretty much anywhere you can get gasoline. Silk Road did not magically make heroin available for everybody in the world. What the Silk Road did was it allowed a person to safely sit in their house and order something rather than having to go out on the street and talk to a person of very, very questionable motive and maybe get robbed and not get the drugs that you're going for, maybe get killed, maybe who knows what that you would face out there on the street trying to deal with strangers to have some kind of a drug deal in a strange city, where with Silk Road, you could go onto your computer and you could deal with the thing in a very safe fashion. And, you know, a person who's going to OD is probably, I mean, the statistics show this, a person who is going to OD is probably going to OD one way or the other. Now, that's tragic and it's horrible. And none of us here, folks listening on the radio, none of us here on this show are condoning the use of drugs or the abuse of drugs. What we're saying is the reality is drug problems exist. And when you can move that transaction into a safe atmosphere rather than just strangers bumping into each other on a street corner, then it absolutely does bring a level of safety into the transaction. So rather than lying to yourself and saying, well, if we just crack down harder, rather than lying to yourself and taking that route, realize when you see these con jobs, when the judge starts bringing forth these crybaby stories about, oh, my son couldn't have got this without Ross or without the Silk Road. That's all it is. It's propaganda. It's crybaby stories. It's meant to tug at your emotions and tug at your heart and shut your brain off. The fact is that it's not Ross's fault that somebody took drugs and overdosed. Ross did not force them. Ross did not in any way do any of those things. All he did, he was no different. You know, you can go to a McDonald's and you can meet somebody in a McDonald's and you can buy heroin from somebody at McDonald's. Now, that doesn't mean McDonald's is guilty of heroin dealing. That just means they provided a building and a nice air conditioner and a hamburger for you to eat while you're sitting there making your drug deal. So no logical case could be made to say that it's McDonald's fault because you met your drug dealer in a McDonald's and then you overdosed on heroin. And yet that's what this argument boils down to. And I've been ranting, and I was promising myself I wouldn't do that once I got Lynn on. So Lynn, I'll shut up. I'll shut up and let you talk, Lynn.
Yeah, you've given me so many things to address, so it's great. I've been taking notes. First of all, it wasn't just stories. They brought in two different parents of these people. It was the prosecution that alleged that six people had died of drug use from drugs they had bought on Silk Road. And first of all, let me say, it was very heartbreaking. It was awful. It's horrible to see a parent or any family member who has lost someone from drug abuse. It's a terrible thing. Ross was very upset. At the same time, does that kind of, first of all, had nothing to do with the charges. It had nothing to do with the what he was convicted for. I thought a sentencing was about addressing the charges and giving the, you know, sentence. They brought in a whole other thing with these people testifying. And at one point, the dad called Ross a sociopath. And I'm like, that's a clinical term. And Ross is not a sociopath. And it was just really got really emotional. And I felt like those people were emotionally manipulated by the prosecution out of their grief. And it was really awful. And it had no place in a courtroom. And that's why people who are on a jury, you don't have the victim's families or a victim's friends on a jury or on the bench for that exact reason, because you can't be objective. It's supposed to be based on evidence. So what we did, we being the defense, but we meaning I paid the money for a $9,000 forensic expert who I just finished paying off. This is kind of expenses that take what happens when you take on the federal government. But in any case, we hired him to analyze each of those six deaths. And he's 30 years experience, hundreds of cases. And he said you absolutely could not scientifically or categorically say that any of them were from drugs from Silk Road. There was no way to do that. And it's all published on our website. And then also two of them might not have been drugs at all. One had just been released from the hospital for pneumonia. One could have suffered a stroke. I mean, it was not scientifically proven at all. And but it became so this emotional thing. And again, I believe it was to justify this draconian sentence that I believe they had already decided was going to happen. Actually, the prosecution didn't even ask for life, but they were going to make Ross an example. They said so. And this justifies it. You know, this somehow can justify
right.
it. And I feel like it's very dangerous.
Does it help them sleep at night? Does it help them sleep at night when they've done this horrible deed to an honest man, to somehow justify it in their own heads? Like even if they're just psychopaths, how do they sleep at night when they're so vicious? It's hard for me to understand what's going on in their heads.
Yeah, well, you probably don't want to take that too far. It's too scary. the other thing is, with their logic, the government had control of that server when two of those deaths occurred. They gained control of the Silk Road server in June of 2013, and two of those deaths occurred after that. So by their logic, by keeping that site open, they are responsible. Right? I mean, you know, that's the logic. And what we're really talking about is something that is a very dangerous precedent. One of the reasons the appeal is so important is transferred intent. It's saying that someone is responsible for what other people do. One person is responsible for what someone else does. So a website host is responsible for whatever anybody does on their site. But they've also expanded this with Federal Express, where they criminally indicted Federal Express for drug trafficking and money laundering because people used it to transport pharmaceuticals that were illegal. Federal Express got indicted. You know, they weren't saying Federal Express was dealing these pharmaceuticals. So it's expanding their ability to arrest more people, expanding criminal liability, and it's a very, to me, troubling trend and precedent that's happening, and the whole case, much of this case, is based on transferred intent.
You know, our show founders, Michael Dean and Nima Vedotti, did a movie called Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. And in it, they related the war on drugs as being sort of a prerequisite for the war on guns and gun ownership. And anybody who's listening from a right-wing point of view, think about this for a minute. If they can arrest a person for running a website where other people actually did something, so that the person running the website was only providing the website and other people's actions took place, then how is that different from arresting a gun shop owner for what someone does with a gun that they bought at the gun shop? Or what does that do in the argument of a pawn shop owner who sells maybe not a gun, maybe it's a knife, or maybe it's a hatchet, or maybe it's just a big rock that he does something bad with? And if you can arrest and convict and give a double life sentence to a man who set up a website where other people did stuff on it, then how much of a leap is it to go and arrest the pawn shop owner because somebody bought something at the pawn shop and then did something bad with it? Hey, you know, how far is that leap?
Right. And the not very far. And, you know, as far as right wing, left wing, this is, you know, Chuck Schumer's case, and I don't think anybody would call him right wing. So it crosses. I don't think it's really a right left thing. For me personally, it has a lot to do with the Constitution and the erosion of our liberty. And, you know, again, as I said, you can argue against Silk Road and all of that. Put all that sensationalism aside and let's see what the government is doing and how it's using the drug war to expand its power.
And that really is what it's about. It's about power. And exactly what Lynn just said, control. It is about using the drug war as an excuse to expand the police state, to expand government power, the NSA. I mean,
you're
all
listening
of these
to the Freedom Fiends.
Stick with us, folks.
An
we'll
invigorating
be right back.
Alternative to those other shows. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Freedom Fiends, before we let you go, this is coming up to the end of the hour. Before, listeners, before we let you go, it's important that you understand that there's something you can do. Lynn, I'm going to throw this over to Lynn and let her explain, but I just want to emphasize that we're not taking this lying down. We have to stand up and do something about it. And Lynn, what is it that you're doing? What is it you're going to do? And what is it that folks can do to be a part of this and to help fight this injustice?
Well, our next step is to appeal. And if you go to freeross.org, we have information there and ways to donate, because to do anything in the legal system, which we are in, and take on the government is very expensive. And so whatever you can do to help us do that, would be great. Now, the reason I think you'd want to is not because of Ross, because you don't know Ross, and I know that. It's because there's very dangerous precedents being set with this case that will impact all of us. I can quickly go over a few of them. Well, one, of course, is if you're against the drug war, they have made Ross the poster boy for the drug war, and winning this appeal is a great pushback against the drug war, which is, you know, trampling on people's rights, expanding government power, and not stopping anyone from using drugs. It's bloating our prisons with nonviolent people who I meet every week when I go to see Ross at the prison, and he tells me about. And these are people whose families are being shattered, and it's so destructive. Besides that, there are very important Fourth Amendment questions here. For instance, is a laptop under the same protection? Is digital material protected the same way the physical material is? Basically, if the government had been searching a physical file cabinet, they would have, what they did was totally unconstitutional. They did not have meet the particularity requirement. But because it was a laptop, they say that they can use a general warrant and rummage through Ross's laptop to see what they can find. Now, this is what we fought the Revolutionary War over, was general warrants. This gives way too much leeway to the government. And but they're saying, well, it's digital, so it's different. So this is a very important question for the digital age going forward. Are we protected by the Fourth Amendment? Can a court use digital evidence to convict someone and send them to prison? Digital evidence lacks integrity. It's very easily manipulated, planted, faked. A mortgage company won't accept a bank statement that's a screenshot because they know how easily faked it is. And yet, most of the evidence was digital in this case. Other courts have thrown it out. Catherine Forrest Court accepted it. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to think about the fact that if digital evidence is accepted, how much peril that puts us in, because it's just not reliable. You don't know who created it. The transferred intent issue, which we discussed last segment, is someone responsible for the actions of someone else? That expands criminal liability tremendously. It makes one person responsible for what someone else does. So there's some very... The government is sending through this case. And I just would like to send them a message back by winning this appeal and saying no to your drug war. It's time to stop and find more constructive solutions to that problem, and stop that government expansion. I believe that they're using the drug war to expand. And the message that, yes, the Fourth Amendment applies to the digital age, that we're going into a whole new frontier here, but we need to keep our traditional time-tested liberty-protecting Bill of Rights. And it's slowly eroding through these kinds of cases. And so it's way bigger than Ross and one individual. And I've seen that because I've seen it up close and personal now. And we need your help. I mean, one family who's not wealthy trying to do this definitely needs help, and we need a grassroots effort. This is the time. This is a battle in that whole struggle, and we need help. So please go to freeross.org and help us.
And any amount that you can give purpose is helpful. Every little bit. If you can donate in Bitcoin, there's ways to do that.
Yeah, buy Ross a cup of coffee.
Many ways that you can make a difference in this. Folks, we're going to break away for the hour, and for the hour break, that is. And you're going to hear some news and ads and stuff. But don't let it get you down, because we're going to be right back on Freedom Fiends.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Is the Freedom Fiends Special Edition, broadcasting from the Wormabago Mobile Studio in the depths of Bootleg Bog, where even the plants are carnivorous and no one ever asks what happened to those missing revenues. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a Bipcot no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more about that at bipcot.org. That's bipcot.org. Hey, Jim.
That means anybody can use this show unless you're with the government. Sorry, Judge Catherine Forrest, you don't get to use this. This is a special show. I'm James Babb. I'm here with Ben Stone, and we have a very wonderful guest, Lynn Albrecht, mother of Ross Albrecht, founder of the Silk Road, and we are learning quite a bit about what Ross has been through. Lynn, I want to ask you about what you've been through as a mother. You know, when I first heard about this case, I was very interested in it, and I'm like, I want to pay attention to that. That's important. But it wasn't until I saw you at an event that, you know, you just connected with me, and I'm like, dang, like this isn't something I can sit on the sidelines for. And I've seen you out there so many times. You've done so much courageous work. And I know in my heart that when Ross is free, it's going to be because of you. It's going to be because of this tireless work that you've done out there. So just, you know, also first, thank you for being with us, and thank you for everything you've done in this campaign. In the last hour, you made a great point that this is so much bigger than one case, bigger than one person. There's so many key principles involved here that need to be defended, and you're doing a wonderful job with that. So I wanted to thank you. Could you just maybe tell us a little bit about maybe what your views were or before you got thrust into this situation, and how it's changed after this sort of involuntary crash course in the U.S. legal system?
Yeah. Well, thank you for your kind words. That's very nice and very encouraging. You know, I've never been a big government fan. And I've always revered the Constitution. And I was coming from that place. I would say I had somewhat of a libertarian bent, although I wasn't, you know, really actively, involved. But I certainly agreed with a lot of things that, you know, Ron Paul said, for example. So that wasn't, and I'm entrepreneurial. My husband's entrepreneurial. We're kind of like that. But having gone through this and seeing how the government operates up close and very personally and in detail, it's horrifying. And so it became alarming to me to see it and realize that, whoa, this is happening in the United States of America. And what about due process? And what about, you know, fairness? And there were so many things, and that I would say it made me much more obviously an activist. Now, that said, my love for my son keeps me going more longer than probably just the being horrified at the government, because I'm extremely tired. You know, it's tiring. It's stressful. But I can't stop because they have Ross. So it keeps me motivated that way. However, I do see it as a bigger fight. And when Ross is free, I will continue. As far as me personally, to be honest, sometimes I am very bereft and I am up against terrible grief and fear about him. I realize that we are up against a very formidable foe. And I've seen, you know, that him not have a fair trial and the sentencing was so draconian. It just seemed they are relentless and don't hold back. They meaning the government in this case, we never get a break, you know, it seems like. And even when I think it would be the fair thing. So it's tough sometimes, to be honest. But at the same time, with the support from people like you and other people, it's been very heartening and inspiring as well. And so I feel like there's two things going on. My personal thing, which is very tough, very hard. But then there's the whole cause, which is inspiring. And also I get really angry, and that helps. And I really work a lot, and that helps. So it kind of gets me out of my grief and into purpose. And so a lot of things going on. Ross is very concerned that I'm not taking care of myself. And I haven't been, but I've told him I committed that I will work out. I will try to take better care of myself than I have been, because I have to. I'm getting old. I have to do it or I just won't make it. So,
you know, I should mention too that since we are on the radio in different hours and in different places, and some stations don't carry the first hour, folks, if you're listening to this on the radio and you didn't hear the first hour, get over to freedomfiends.com, download the entire interview. It's going to be right there. There's going to be links in the show notes below the file itself, where you can find out more about how to donate to Ross's cause here, to try to, not just for Ross's case, but like Lynn was saying, so that, you know, hopefully we can stop this from happening over and over and over again. And that's really what this is about. What this calls to mind to me is so many other cases where, you know, something horrible has happened to a child, a kidnapping or a drunk driver has killed them or whatever, and a mother becomes energized. And an energized mother is one of the most dangerous things in existence. And it goes anywhere from a bear to a lion to a human being. It's nature. You step on that mother's child, you harm that mother's child, and you are unleashing the power of the universe onto this argument. And that's what we're facing here. And so, right, you know, on. I don't have a problem at all with saying, well, yes, of course it's Lynn's child. And Ross is a man. He is a fully functioning human being on his own. But you know what? He's still Lynn's baby.
That's true. Yeah, yes. It's unleashing that force of mother love that will not let me quit. And it's true. You're right. And
not every mother would do what you have done. You've gone so far beyond. And I think I mentioned to you, I said, hey, if my turn ever comes, please get in touch with my mom and give her a little tutoring.
Well, I said, finally, my big mouth has come in handy. You know, it's like my whole life I've been, you know, so now I finally get to use it. But I do believe in freedom very strongly. And I think we have to fight for our freedom right now. I think we're at a crossroads in history. And it could go either way. I'm concerned about it. And this case has brought it home to me. But it's not just, as you say, it's not unique to Ross or this case. We are at a crossroads. And, you know, just read 1984. It'll, you know, and which I'm sure you have. It's very concerning. It's happening fast.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. You know, I followed maybe 4 or 5 different federal trials over the past 10 years, and I've sat in on a few, and I've learned sort of they sort of have this playbook that they go by that is very different from what you see in TV and movies. And maybe you could describe that a little bit for people. But my experience, you know, when you see, you know, like a court drama, you think like, oh, these people are locked in this struggle to find the truth, right? And it's like, oh, and then finally, if they figure out that the guy on trial is really innocent, they're like, oh, you know, he's immediately set free, and, you know, and there's applause, and everything's happily ever after. But my experience is that it's 180 degrees from trying to get to the truth. In fact, the entire circus is designed to keep the jury from finding out the truth. And everything I've seen when I've attended a federal trial, luckily as just an observer, is that they're constantly, you can't say that. Wait a minute, get the jury out of here so we can talk about that. And then, nope, you can't say that. And the jury will come back and be like, and please erase what you just heard from your memory. Okay. It's this weird, weird show that goes on. And everything is about presenting a very controlled message to the jury from the judge, the prosecutor. Everything is structured in a way to generate convictions. How would you say your experience with this case reinforces my theory, or how would you describe what you've experienced?
Well, it just sounds like you're describing Ross's trial. It was a very controlled narrative. The prosecution fought tooth and nail to keep certain things away from the jury, pre-trial and during trial. There was a whole huge amount of testimony by a government agent that they struck and said to the jury, forget you ever heard that, basically, and stop the defense from pursuing. And of course, they precluded the fact that there were two corrupt agents intricately involved in Silk Road until after the trial. The defense fought to have to be able to address that at trial, and the prosecution said, well, no, it'll jeopardize our investigation. So the defense said, well, okay, we'll put off the trial. No, the schedule and, you know, right to a speedy trial. We're like, we'll wait. And then, so it was precluded. And then it came out that it wouldn't have jeopardized their investigation at all because those agents knew they were being investigated and had been interviewed by law enforcement. It was completely about keeping the jury from hearing about it. And, I got a call Christmas morning, actually, from the lawyer saying he was very upset. He goes, well, he fought for it, but the judge sided with the prosecution and they were going to preclude it. And he didn't tell me what it was because it was still sealed, but he was like, wow, I can't believe they're doing this, you know? And I didn't have a very good Christmas because I could tell it was not good.
This is such a heartbreaking story. The more you hear about it and the more you read about it, and then going back and then I've read some of the judge's statements and some of the things that she said in the sentencing phase and so forth. It's just so frustrating and so heartbreaking. I want to give the website again. It's freeross.org. Is that right, Lynn?
Right. Yeah.
And any amount that a person can donate, a small amount, anything, is going to help, because a trial like this, to appeal a trial like this and to try to get the process going again, takes a vast amount of money. It's almost unimaginable.
Yeah, it really does.
If you've never gone through it, you're not going to believe the actual dollar amounts that it takes to do this kind of stuff. But you can't. There's no choice. You have to find it. Otherwise.
Yeah.
Right. It's a double life sentence. It's, folks, stick with us. We're going to be right back after this break.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
I'm Ben Stone. With me is James Babb, and our special guest on this special edition of the Freedom Fiends, Lynn Albrecht, the mother of Ross Ulbricht, the Dread Pirate Roberts, maybe you know better by, or Silk Road. Lynn, you know, Jim was mentioning during the break there that how this is not unusual, that this is happening to families that are being torn apart today, yesterday, tomorrow. And that's, you know, of course we're fighting for Ross's freedom. Of course we want Ross free. But bigger than that, this is a fight that people need to get behind, because it can happen to anybody. It can happen to your neighbor, your brother, your daughter, your son. So kind of follow through on what Jim was talking about there, that this is all of our problem, really. We're all the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I've really learned from being so involved in this. This isn't unique to Ross. This is just what they do. For instance, they will brag about, oh, well, we have such a big conviction rate. Well, 97% of people plea. They're advised to plea, because if they go to trial, their odds are very slim winning. 1% of people win of the 3% that go. And they will be, if they lose, they have much worse penalties than if they plea. So off just by the numbers alone, statistically, it's obvious there's innocent people in there. Not to mention people that might be guilty of the crimes they're alleged to have done, but are nonviolent. And I've come around to the view that if you're nonviolent and you're not a threat to anyone, you shouldn't be in a cage. You could be, look, slap an ankle bracelet on somebody and have them do community service or something, make restitution, whatever. But, you know, it's very primitive and barbaric to just lock people up to rot away. They don't do anything constructive in there. I mean, Ross does use his time constructively. He's teaching a GED class to other inmates to help them get their high school diploma. He's on his third round of... He was just telling me today how, I'm starting my class again, and he's really involved with them. When I visit, he goes, there's one of my students, and he really takes them under his wing. He's very giving that way. And that's good for him too. And he's studying artificial intelligence now, and he's just doing different things to not, you know, he works out and he, you know, does different things. But I mean, generally, you know, it's a challenge always. And it's such a waste of human beings. And I go to the prison and I sit with the families and we all talk, and, you know, and then I see children clinging to their fathers. They just get that 1 hour just soaking up their father, the wives, the parents. It's just heartbreaking. And these are nonviolent people. We're all in a room together. Everybody's fine. I mean, it just seems like there could be a better solution in the land of the free for this situation. And of course, it's a terrible disgrace. The United States has one of the worst, I think, except for Seychelles, the most people in prison of any country in the world. It's just stunning. And of course, that's because of the drug war. So most of them are nonviolent. So I don't think this is what our founders intended.
it's a tragedy of an incredible scale. Yeah, it's a
right.
So, and I think that's what, you know, when I think about it, it just makes me just so angry, and it just makes me want to take some kind of action. You know, and I think with the Freedom Fiends, at least I get a little bit of therapy, because
Yeah.
I mean, it's a couple times a week. We get to make fun of these people, but, you know, we don't lose sight of how serious this is. I mean, this is it's a civil rights crisis that this continent hasn't seen since chattel slavery. I mean, we've got millions of people in cages right now for no reason, just so some fat cats can line their pockets, just so this political class can be enabled for another day. And it's got to stop. It's got to stop somehow.
Yeah, no, it really goes against the principles our country was founded on. And, you know, in Europe, there's, you know, so much more enlightened about it. I was reading about German prisons. I mean, they're just more humane. And they don't give life sentences. I mean, this is this judge's fourth life sentence this year.
Wow.
And
she is vicious. And let's just say her name again.
Catherine Forrest.
I feel like spitting on the ground when I hear that word. Ugh. Stick with us, folks. We're going to be right back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. Pouring molten truth down your ear hole. Folks, here's something else you got to. This is one of, I was saying during the break to Lynn and James, this is one of my pet peeves in reference to this topic. First off, the name Dread Pirate Roberts, or DPR, comes from a movie where the part of the plot is that you have this guy, and he's the Dread Pirate Roberts, and then he, at some point, he does all that he wants to do with that position as the Dread Pirate Roberts, and he hands it off to another person. And then he is the Dread Pirate Roberts for a while, and then after a while he hands it to another person, and then that person hands it to another person. So if you are setting up a username, Dread Pirate Roberts, on a website, if you're doing it properly, you are doing it for the purpose of eventually stepping out and handing it to others, or to have multiple people using the same identity. That's the purpose of having a Dread Pirate Roberts. So when Ross set up the Dread Pirate Roberts, I know, because I've been a member of this community for so long, not necessarily Silk Road, but this whole internet thing and the meme that goes along with the Dread Pirate Roberts. This has been an old hacker thing for years. When you set up a website and you have the main administrator as DPR, as the Dread Pirate Roberts, what you are doing is you are setting up a thing that multiple people can use the account. And the judge knew this in the case. And I'll let Lynn talk about that in a second. But first, I have to rant about this because it's so infuriating to me. It's not one person. I have said this since day one. The Dread Pirate Roberts is not a person. We are the Dread Pirate Roberts. That's the whole point of having a Dread Pirate Roberts. Otherwise, he could have just been, you know, Ross 001 or Ross Freedom or whatever. He's not. He's the Dread Pirate Roberts. And we are all the Dread Pirate Roberts. And again, this goes back to, you know, amounts of information that were kept from the jury. There was things that were brought up in the trial that the Dread Pirate Roberts was accused of that Ross was found guilty of. And when, in fact, we know that multiple people had control of this identity. Now, if you have a website like the Silk Road or any type of a forum or any type of a thing like that where you have an admin that's controlling the website and you have multiple people who can log in as the admin, they can change things like the text in files, and they can change what's appears in a chat, and all that stuff is available for anybody with an admin level to get in and change. And guess what, folks? The government had admin capabilities on the Silk Road, and the judge knew that. Now, that's my rant, and again, this just infuriates me because this is so twisted, and so few people understand that Ross was convicted for things that the judge knew multiple people could have been involved in.
And including the federal agents acting as Dread Pirate Roberts themselves.
Exactly.
The same federal agents that had their hand in the cookie jar stealing millions of dollars in Bitcoin. They had motive. They had means. And, you know, how could you trust a single word that those people say? I can't.
Yeah. Well, I'll jump in here because in the trial, it was clear that the prosecution had a very strict narrative, and one of them was There was one and only one Dread Pirate Roberts. There was a witness who was known on the site as Inigo, who was a high-level admin who's now in custody. And he was on the witness list, and they took him off. I don't know why, but he did have a statement that the defense wanted to present to the jury, one statement, and the prosecution fought it. The judge allowed it not to be heard. And what it was this. Inigo and Dread Pirate Roberts had, because there were so many different people behind these identities, had set up a prompt when they would talk to each other to confirm who they were actually speaking with. And Inigo said that when he logged on, that the DPR he was talking to at the time didn't know the answer. He didn't know the prompt. The prosecution would fought tooth and nail to not have the defense even let that little bit of information be known by the jury. So, I mean, that's right. Just one
hiding
example.
The truth. An example of hiding any
the narrative.
Truth that could lead to an exoneration. They cannot allow
or even
it.
Any doubt. A little right. bit, yeah, exactly. Or even if, you know, their own agent, Jared Dryagin, said that, and he was on the site undercover for 2 years, said he thought there were many DPRs. He said that himself. Alex Winter, who did the movie Deep Web, who interviewed inside, you know, some people that were high up in Silk Road, and he interviewed them, and some of them appear in the documentary. He said over and over again, they said, of course there were more than one DPR. It was obvious from their personality, their ages, how they acted. One said, yeah, I wanted to get another account or something, and DPR said no. And he goes, would you just go talk to the other DPR and tell, you know, and tell him, and he came back and said, okay, you can.
Yeah.
I mean, they knew, you know, and Amir Taki said he spoke with DPR in early days and they had a great conversation. And then about a year later, again, the guy didn't even remember talking to him. He said it was a totally different person. You know, and there's many of these anecdotes. And this was not allowed to be known by the jury.
Right.
Because they weren't after the truth. The judge and the prosecutor were not after the truth. And the last thing they wanted was for the jury to hear the truth.
Right. Or to even doubt their narrative. They wouldn't let Ross's libertarian views be known to the jury. Because, well, then that might question his reason for creating the site, for one thing. And somehow, you know, they could not be known that Ross had libertarian views and what they were. Another thing was, it wasn't known to the jury that legal things were sold on Silk Road. It was barely mentioned. Marijuana was barely mentioned. It was, you know, you would have thought it was strictly heroin and maybe some cyanide or something. I mean, it was just not that. And again, I'm not defending Silk Road, but I mean, it was a very distorted view of what it was.
You know, let me throw in too some things that some people might not think about that would be available on Silk Road that a lot of people would not think of. So, asthma inhalers. Possibly blood pressure medication. Let me create a real quick scenario here. I am in Southern Alabama. My regular medical, and I have all kinds of medical problems that I won't go into, but my regular doctor is in just north of Cincinnati, Ohio. So for me, if I need my medications and I can't make that trip, or if we're off in New Hampshire or we're out west or wherever in our motorhome, for me to get a hold of my doctor and try to get medication is a lot of hoops to jump through. And I'm saying this theoretically because I never actually was on Silk Road. But if something like that were available, I could jump onto there, get the exact same medications that the doctor has had me on for 8 years. I could get them on the Silk Road from a location, you know, offshore from another country, and have it delivered to me rather than having to go and get a whole new appointment at a whole new doctor and try to go through all the process to get that doctor up to date on my case so that I could get medication in Arizona or Alabama or New Hampshire or something like this. So not only illicit drugs, but all kinds of things that you just don't want to have to go through all the hoops to get under other circumstances, you could get on the Silk Road. And the one other thing I wanted to throw out about the Silk Road was three different times I have tried to interview people who had experience with the Silk Road. The first time was before the Silk Road was shut down and before Ross was arrested. Then about the time that Ross was arrested, I tried to do interviews with people about the Silk Road. And then about a year after Ross was arrested, I tried to do interviews with people about the Silk Road. And I found in the first layer of contact, people would tell me, oh, yeah, I've been to the Silk Road. I know all about it. I can tell you all how it works, and I can tell you all. And then as soon as I would start in with the hard questions, it would be revealed that, in fact, they didn't even know how to get to the Silk Road, much less had they ever actually been there or traded on it, or they had seen something similar to it, but it wasn't actually the Silk Road. So they're describing something else that happened that somebody else showed them on somebody else's laptop. And to a man, I have even today not been able to secure an interview with anyone who actually went on the Silk Road, and I can verify that they actually saw it and actually logged on and actually interfaced with it. But I have found all kinds of people who are experts on it. So, you know, I don't know where that rant was going, but Lynn, I'll give it back to you for a while.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had a guy come up to me and say that he got his insulin on Silk Road, and what now that it was closed down, he didn't know how he was going to afford it. Now, I'm sure there's arguments about doing it that way, but the point is it wasn't just about heroin and all of that, and yeah, and of course there was raw milk and art and books and a book club, and there was a harm reduction forum, and with a doctor that apparently DPR paid to be there. I don't think the current dark net websites now are have a harm reduction, or you know, there was a certain morality involved in Silk Road. You might not agree with it. They restricted certain things like child pornography, for example, and they had debates about it because some people were so open market, they said that should be allowed. And I guess, you know, theoretically, but it was not allowed. And I'm very happy about that. Also, you know, assassinations and stolen documents or stolen items were not allowed. And there's this all this misconception about what was allowed. We talked about that earlier. And it's just become this sensationalized just cauldron of lies, basically, about it. And at the same time, yeah, I don't think it's great to a lot of it is disturbing to me. I admit that. But I understand the principles and I don't really think the drugs were the reason that it was targeted. So
let's talk about how much money it takes to fight something like this. Lynn, you know, the accusation has been made that, well, you know, Ross made all kinds of money. I'm sure he's got millions and millions stashed away. But of course, yeah. Of course, the government came in such a way that they grabbed the vast wealth that we're all talking about theoretically was in Bitcoin.
How much did they grab?
I am not sure of the figure. It was, I want to say $18 million in Bitcoin, but I could be wrong. I don't know. To me, it's so abstract that I didn't even.
I think it's a lot more than that. In fact, well, one of the reports I read, I guess they initially auctioned off a small portion of what they had stolen. And that would maybe was around the $18 million number, but I think this number is well over $100 million in Bitcoin that they appropriated for themselves.
Well, they took a bunch from the Silk Road site. That's different than Ross's laptop, and a bunch is still unaccounted for. There's money out there that I guess DPR has it. I don't know. There's a bunch of money that's missing.
Maybe those federal agents are on a yacht with it right now.
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the last segment of the show. It's what we like to call redemption in the third act. And the whole idea is to send you, the listener, away with something positive, something good to go on, and something, you know, to leave this in an upbeat. And I think if we can consider in any possible way that we could have a good end to this story, then that would be seeing Ross go through a retrial, an appeal process, getting this thing seen and heard by a different judge. And that, folks, that takes lots and lots of money. Anybody who's never been through this process, you can't imagine how much money that it takes. You know, very oftentimes families will end up having to get rid of their homes and, you know, all kinds of things to fund this kind of stuff. So if there's any way at all that you can help Lynn and her family in fighting this thing and getting this appeal process going, get to freeross.org, and any amount that you can give, or anything you can do to volunteer some help, maybe, you know, set up a Twitter account and just start sharing this stuff, or set up a Facebook account and start sharing this stuff, or if you can anyway, I mean, be constructive. There's got to be things that we can do about this. Lynn, give us hope. Tell us, what can we do?
Yeah, well, I take my cues from Ross. He said, where there's life, there's hope. He is very inspiring that way. And, you know, we're going for this appeal, and the appeal is about not judging the facts of the case as much as whether the law was properly administered. The fact that these corrupt agents were precluded from trial, and many other, in my mind, and I think in lawyers' minds, other aspects that our defense witnesses were not allowed to testify. There's several good, strong issues for appeal. And it's important to push back if the government doesn't behave. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do. That's our duty. And so, you know, we need to remain hopeful and go for it. And I actually we have given up our home. And right now I'm arranging to house sit so that I can, you know, put more towards this effort. I mean, it's important. I think our freedom and our liberty and maintaining our rights are crucial right now. And this is one way to send a message back to the government saying, no, we're not just going to let you steamroll over this situation. Fair trials are a foundation of our liberty. If we don't have a fair trial system, we're really in a lot of trouble here. And it's important to push back. And if I thought it were a totally lost cause, I wouldn't keep going. But, you know, we got to keep trying. And like I say, I think it's our duty. And I think we still, like Ross says, there's still hope. And so we're hoping and praying for good, strong appellate judges who don't think that non-violent charges should result in a life sentence, who, you know, don't think that your sentence should be influenced by uncharged crimes, and who think that digital material should have the same protections as physical material going into the digital age, which will impact us all. So,
you know, if they can
hoping
just
write, for the, yeah.
If they can just grab your laptop and they control the laptop, and then they claim something is on the laptop and you have no way of proving or disproving it because they claim it. I mean, this just opens the floodgates to so many problems that
absolutely.
It's kind of like, I think it was Stalin or one of those guys that said essentially, you know, I always miss this quote, but basically you tell me who you want and I'll provide the law that they broke. You know, that's what law has become. And we have to fight against this. We have to stand up against it. You know, otherwise, how many generations have kept freedom alive in the hearts of men? And how can we just step back and let it go?
That's really true.
You can't.
Can't do it.
No, I have a letter. I have a copy of the letter that you read, Lynn, at Porkfest that brought the room to tears. And Ross says, you know, I hope my story has shed light on some of the issues we face these days. There are many, but please don't let what's happened to me lead you to despair. Keep standing for liberty and respect for our rights. Keep fighting for your freedom, and eventually we will win. And, you know, and that's what Ross is telling us to do. And I think that really resonates with me.
Yeah, me too.
Lynn, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank
with us.
You. You guys are a lot of fun. You're great.
Jim,
thank
always
you so much, Lynn.
Jim, yeah, thank
always
you.
Always good to do a show with you.
My pleasure.